Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is the former Democratic State Co-Chair in New York State, John Sullivan. And a little over a week before the election, John is going to share his thoughts on, you know, how the campaigns have evolved and what he's seen and you know, what he's learned. So, John, let's start the conversation off with Andrew Cuomo's debate the other night against Mark Molinaro. What was your impression?
Well, I watched the entire thing, and I think the governor was surprisingly right out of the gate, very pugilistic. And obviously, that was a strategy that they had thought about and adopted. And in some ways, I do think he was effective because it made Molinaro appear somewhat like a lesser person in terms of elevation and substance. I mean, he seemed less prepared, if you will. I mean, I think that they painted him into a corner, and many of the things that Molinaro said just didn't kind of dent the way they ought to have, because it kept coming back to Andrew's domination of the entire program, and he did. I mean, he dominated the moderators and so forth, and that's something he's quite good at and he's quite versed in. And you know, I've always said there are kind of like two Andrews. There's a good Andrew and there's kind of the bad Andrew. And sometimes the bad Andrew shows more than the good Andrew. So it's a mixed bag. But I just wanted to say, Cynthia, first of all, thank you for inviting me back. And you know, I've relocated now. I'm back in my old hometown of Oswego, which is right at the northern end of the Oswego River, where it meets Lake Ontario and then flows into Lake Ontario, and Canada's just across the way. And, you know, you get a little bit of a different perspective on state and even maybe national issues when you live in a place like Oswego. You're not within the shadow of the state capital, you know what I mean? So I've been listening and I've been talking to people and I've been trying to put my ear to the ground to see, you know, what is the general sense of things. And the other night I attended a debate between Will Barkley and a woman by the name of Gail Tosh, who's running, she's a Democrat running for the assembly in the, I think it's the 120th district, I'm not sure. It's mostly Oswego County. And Will Barkley hasn't had an opponent in 10 years. You know what? It was a great evening. It was packed. There were probably 150 people there. It was civil. It was a discussion of the issues. There was no ad hominem anything about it, and it made me feel that it kind of redeemed my faith in the American electoral process. It really, that's the way it used to be, that's the way it ought to be. And one other thing I wanted to note is sometimes truth comes from the most far-flung places. And I noted this week that the Adirondack Daily Enterprise endorsed Stephanie Miner for governor. The Adirondack Daily Enterprise is published in Saranac Lake, and it used to be owned by a fellow by the name of Roger Tubby. I don't know if you remember him, but Roger Tubby, he actually ran for Congress in the North Country District a couple of times. But he, his claim to fame was that he was very close to and worked very closely with in the White House. And he had a lot of common sense. And you remember Harry Truman's famous saying, the buck stops here? Well, with Donald Trump, I'm afraid what we have now is it's not my fault. If you were to put a moniker on his, on a plaque to be, or a placeholder to be put on his desk, it wouldn't say the buck stops here. So the Adirondack Daily Enterprise has a lot of wisdom. They endorsed Stephanie and they said, among other things, that she's qualified, sensible, full of integrity. She has left partisan politics, the negative partisan politics, long ago. But unfortunately, it all comes down to money. And that's where we're at. and power politics is still in play, and Andrew Cuomo is a master at that. And as we get down to the wire, you know, it becomes increasingly obvious that he is not only the conductor of the orchestra, the writer of the music, but he's able to turn the volume up in ways that other candidates cannot because they're bereft of money. And why? Because at this point, given the probability of Andrew being reelected, what special interest is going to step up to the plate and give money to an underfunded challenger, knowing the tendency of Andrew to be a little bit vindictive or retributive in regard to people who support his opponents? So he's got a lot of things locked down. And my only hope is that, assuming he does prevail, that the good Andrew prevails and that there are 4 years in which he can make some progress with hopefully a Democratic Senate and solving some of the problems like campaign finance reform that he's pledged to solve and hasn't been able to ostensibly do. So hope does spring eternal. But I was very glad to read the Adirondack Daily Enterprise editorial.
How is Stephanie Miner doing?
She's doing well. She's doing what she should be doing. She's out. She's speaking. She's traveling. And she's going down to the wire. She hasn't got the financial resources to mount a media campaign. And I think one of the other things that the editorial said that was so true, it's like, we sat down with Stephanie Miner. We listened to her. We know she's qualified. If Stephanie Miner could come into everyone's living room in the way that she did the editorial board of the Adirondack Daily Enterprise, she would be elected. Unfortunately, the money isn't there to do that, and so the probability is minimal. But hopefully they'll get enough votes, 50,000, to get the new party, bipartisan party, on the ballot as a regular party, and we'll go from there. And I honestly hope that in the next 4 years, should Andrew be reelected, that he would reach out to people like Stephanie Miner and say, you know, you've got some ideas. Let's talk about them. One of the things that has always stressed me is that sometimes, unless it's Andrew's idea, it just doesn't fly. For example, reforming the way the state pays for Medicaid costs. Mm-hmm. It is as clear as a bell to me that if you want to rejuvenate upstate New York, take the burden, take the mandated burden off the counties, have the state fund Medicaid, reform the Medicaid program. And in some counties, Buffalo, Erie County being one, it's over 80%, like 84, 85%, I think, of the local real property tax levy that the county imposes goes right back to Albany to fund the Medicaid program. Well, that doesn't leave much for bridges and roads and sewer line improvements, and that's part of the problem. So people like Stephanie have good ideas. Andrew hopefully will be open to new and bolder approaches. And as I said, if in fact the Democrats take control of the state Senate, the likelihood of reform is greater in terms of passing legislation that will limit campaign contributions and at least repeal the LLC loophole, which actually Andrew's taken great advantage of. So we'll see, you know, if he'll put his money where his mouth is, or his mouth where his money is. We'll see what happens, assuming he does prevail.
You know, you just brought up an interesting point, and that's, you mentioned the word bipartisanship. And Stephanie Miner's campaign has been more or less bipartisan. But at the same time, in the state Senate, Jeff Klein and his IDC, they caucus with the Republicans. Wouldn't you call that bipartisan? What's the difference between Jeff Klein and Stephanie Miner's stance?
The difference is that it was not necessarily bipartisan. It was self-partisan. It was advancing the interests of Jeffrey Klein and other of his compatriots so that they had a bolder, bigger role to play and more patronage, if you will, to dispense. it didn't really advance any of the ideological causes. They were subsumed by the Republican agenda, but they got more scraps from the table, if you will, than they would have had they remained with the Democratic minority. So that's, to me, that's cancerous. I think that whole approach was bad to begin with. I never supported the Independent Democratic Conference. I thought they were Judas-like, if you will, and I'm glad to see it finally end. Now, whether Andrew Cuomo actually supported it, some have rumored. Whether he didn't, I guess, is now somewhat academic in that he is actually out campaigning for Democratic Senate candidates. And so there's a chance to make a real difference and to pass legislation that, reform legislation particularly, that's long been in the hopper but has never gone anywhere. So the proof will be in the pudding.
Right now there's a one-seat difference, and that one seat is Chip Gefelder in Brooklyn. And
well, there's another issue, you know. What can I say?
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to use the term quisling. Maybe I shouldn't, but he's elected as a Democrat, and yet he caucuses
right.
with the Republicans
unabashedly.
That's wrong. That's just wrong. But his constituents are the ones who have to hold him accountable, and that hasn't happened yet.
Now let's just talk about this scenario. The real estate interests and the charter school interests have a big stake in the Republicans remaining in the majority, and Sip Gefelder is their golden boy. Okay. So if everything remains the same, if the numbers remain the same and Felder wins on the 6th, then everything will be as it is right now. And the Democrats will still not be in the majority. And, you know, Flanagan will, you know, be a head honcho again. Do you envision that happening?
Well, I think in that scenario, Andrew Cuomo would be in a position where he would have to step up to the plate even more so and exert more influence and try to persuade Felder that this is not the way to run the railroad. Whether he could succeed or not, I'm not sure, but he can be very persuasive. I hope it doesn't boil down to one seat. I'm hopeful that the Democratic advantage will be several seats, but we'll see. You know, I do still think, given the national issues here, that this is not a good year to be running as a Republican. Whether you support Trump officially or not, it's the Republican Party has been overtaken by this person in office whose goal really is self-aggrandizement rather than the solving of problems or you know, even where do I begin? I won't. But the Republican Party has they've now been taken over, but they're silent. Well, that's wrong. And so they should be made to pay at the ballot box. There should be. Let me take the local congressional race here. You know, I'm now going to be voting in the race between Katko and Dana Balter. All right, Katko probably has a slight edge, but he has done a lot of good things. He advanced the cause of Fort Ontario becoming a national park. That's good, but he, in being reelected, he's going to be there to advance the Trump agenda, and he's been with Trump 80-90% of the time. I can't vote for Katko. I can't vote for him because of that. I think a lot of people who would otherwise be persuaded to vote for someone who's a reasonable Republican are going to say, you know, no. I'm saying no to Trump. And so I do see in New York State a very big blue wave, if you will. and the people in the blue wave are going to partially hold their nose and vote for Andrew Cuomo, but unplug their nose and vote no to Trump and his minions. And I do see that affecting the results of the Senate majority and many other races, you know, off the down ballot races as well.
As this season unfolded and there was so many twists and turns, did anything really surprise you about the election cycle this year?
No, maybe disappoint me would be a better question. Yes, I'm very disappointed. And I'm disappointed in the timidity of the Republicans, particularly those in leadership positions. They should be speaking out. This is just wrong. And when you know, former presidents and other Democratic office holders are targeted by a crazed bomber, and the president reacts in the way he did, kind of like, well, okay, that's all. Let's get on to the next issue here. Or let's go back to throwing hurling insults. That is just wrong. Stop it. And they're not saying that. And as a result, they ought to pay a price at the ballot box. And I hope they will.
You know, it seems as though Donald Trump has exhibited some bizarre behavior, you know, since he's been elected.
And it seems. He hasn't gotten any better. It hasn't gotten better because he is who he is. And his psychological profile and the challenges it portends are, I think, insurmountable in a person of 71 years of age. It's all about him. But the real failure of our system is the Republicans have made a Faustian bargain. They're saying, well, you know, we're getting judges appointed, so we'll just shut up and support the guy. You know, that's where I think we've gone off the rails, and because we've sacrificed the integrity of our system, we've sacrificed the integrity, ultimately, I think, of our economy. I think that's, you know, they voted for a wrecking ball. The wrecking ball is still doing a lot of wrecking, and they're silent. Wrong.
You know, that's a good phrase, sacrifice the integrity. Andrew
what
Cuomo
do we stand
has
for?
Not...
You know, what are we ultimately, what makes us different than every other country? We have been a bastion of freedom, a beacon of hope. We are a country that people aspire to come to and live in. That's why these Central American people are walking thousands of miles in the heat to try to get an opportunity to be granted asylum. And to erect a barrier and say, no, we're not even going to consider you. We don't care what your circumstances are. That's wrong, because that's not who we are. And I think the more this individual at the top keeps showing that he's incapable of exerting the type of leadership that is expected of a president, the more ultimately the American electorate is going to come to its senses and say, you know what? This is not the way it should be. A pox on all your houses.
But, you know, I've noticed now that Trump's been president, people are glued to the TV. They want to see what the next installment is going to be. It's like a soap opera. And I think participation...
It's a three-ring circus. And, you know, it's... Yeah. He's P.T. Barnum extraordinaire. I mean, once one ring dies down, the act starts getting a little stale, bing, another act starts up in the middle ring, and then another act in the third ring. And, you know, you can't keep track of all of this. But that's standard operating procedure for many authoritarian individuals. And the other thing is demean the press, you know, excoriate the press. What is the press doing? They're holding someone accountable. He doesn't want to be held accountable. So we say fake news and things like that. You know, get off it. Come on. Facts are facts. Facts do matter.
Right.
So I pray collectively we come to our senses. I think that ultimately will happen. The question is will it happen on November 6th? And I think in large part, hopefully it will. If it doesn't, then we are really in deep doo-doo. I just wrote an op-ed piece for the Syracuse newspapers, which will be published, I believe, tomorrow. I don't want to share all of it with you, but I could tell you a little bit of what I said. I said, Donald Trump has been hurling around verbal political pipe bombs ever since he descended that regal escalator in Trump Tower to announce his candidacy for president. I mean, he's become the unfunny Henny Youngman of political insults. He's the divider in chief. He's not a healer. Well, I go on and on, say that real leaders take responsibility. They gain respect in so doing. They don't hurl insult after insult and simply demand the other side cease all criticism. The tone is set at the top, period. The tone is set at the top in Washington. The tone in New York State is set at the top in Albany. And there needs to be corrective course, certainly on the national level. And I think in some regards in New York, we need a corrective course as well. Whether that will happen is more doubtful in New York, but there's an opportunity for course correction even after the election, I believe.
You know, I remember when Mario Cuomo was governor, he held the party apparatus in a tight grip. He was not flattering to a lot of people. And it's the same thing that's going on now. The son learned from the father. So wouldn't you say that
I think very different. When you close your eyes and listen, they sound a lot alike. The inspirational rhetoric is there at times. But Andrew has this kind of negative bent. He's got to have a boogeyman to go after. He's got to have somebody to fight with. Mario Cuomo fought often with his own ideas. He was what they call him, Hamlet on the Hudson. I think Mario Cuomo was one of the premier political polemicists of our age. He was an amazing but professorial leader. Andrew is not. He's more, you know, he tinkers with motors and motorcycles, and he wants to get in and the mechanics of things. And he's very good at it. I mean, he knows power politics better than almost anybody. And that's in part why he's succeeded. But he does have, the good part of him is still there. Mario Cuomo is still there. And so I'm hoping that that'll be the emphasis in the event he's elected to a third term.
Now, we don't have a crystal ball, but and we know that the possibility of Andrew Cuomo winning is going to be without question. So what do you envision over the next 4 years?
Well, as you said, I don't have a crystal ball. I do have hope, and it would be my hope that he would take stock of where we're at, that he would continue as he's done, I mean, quite effectively in some respects, lead the charge, the national malaise that we have in the Trump presidency, but that he would do a course correction in terms of his own approach to governance of New York State and get back down to solve the problem of state takeover of Medicaid, build infrastructure in a way that is meaningful in upstate New York. Stay away from all the ribbon cutting and flash in the pan type things that get a lot of publicity, but ultimately don't really achieve great success. Listen to some of his critics instead of disdain them. He has an opportunity and he has the ability, if he does listen and if he does take stock of where he's at, to make a huge turnaround. So I'm hopeful.
Have you spoken to our friend Bill Samuels lately?
Not in the last several weeks, I haven't, no.
Bill, I believe, is not exactly what you would call a Cuomo fan. Does he have any hope for things turning around?
You know,
I haven't
you'd have
spoken
to ask
to him
Dr. Bill. I know that he still is a strong advocate of many of the things that I've been talking about, like state takeover of the Medicaid funding and other steps that would make our state stronger and more competitive. And Bill's been a great champion of those issues and other reforms. And I know that he's a strong advocate for the Democratic takeover of the Senate. And he's always been, in my view, had a positive influence on New York politics, and I'm sure he'll continue to do so. And whether Andrew Cuomo's the governor or Stephanie Miner's the governor or Mark Molinaro's the governor, you know, anything can happen. Who knows? I mean, I'm going to cast my ballot for Stephanie Miner. I support her. I think she's well qualified. I wish everyone in this state could have a chance to sit down, listen to her talk, listen to get a sense of who she is, because I think if they did, she'd win. But that's not in the cards because of one big issue, and that is money. And money is the mother's milk of politics. In many ways, it always has been. It ought not to be. We need to take steps to reduce the influence of money and special interests in politics.
Both you and I are keen observers of the political process. Has anybody heard from Cynthia Nixon since she lost the primary?
Well, you know, woof, gone, off the stage, vanished. I just think that was a mistake. You know, hindsight's always 20/20. I mean, in some ways, if the Working Families Party had gotten behind Stephanie Miner instead of Cynthia Nixon, we might be looking at a different outcome. But that didn't happen. So,
well,
hey, sirrah,
so
sirrah,
we have,
I was say.
Right. We have a little over a week to go before, you know, that we all cast our ballot. So
don't
we'll
stop
see what happens.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
Right.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
Right. So, you know, I really enjoy talking with you, and maybe you could come on again from time to time to share your thoughts about what's going on in state government.
Well,
so,
I appreciate it, Cynthia. I always enjoy our conversations, and hopefully I've contributed a verse or two. Obviously, my opinions are my opinions, but I've been around politics my entire life, and I do have something to say. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to say it.
And thank you for coming on Focus on Albany. So you've been listening to former Democratic State Chair John Sullivan, and if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. John, have a great day, have a great week, and we'll talk soon. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you again, Cynthia.